Hi, this is Scott Wilkinson, host of Home Theater Geeks. In episode 120, I chat with Dave Duncan of Texas Instruments about DLP technology. So stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Home Theater Geeks is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Home Theater Geeks with Scott Wilkinson, recorded July 16th, 2012, episode 120, Millions of Mirrors. This episode of Home Theater Geeks is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All stream directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit. Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here, online editor of hometheater.com. This week's guest geek is Dave Duncan, the business manager of DLP Cinema for Texas Instruments, and we're going to be talking all about DLP technology today. Hey, Dave, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Scott. How are you doing today?
Doing just great. How about yourself?
Fine, thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. DLP technology is something that has always fascinated me and most home theater geeks I know, so we're going to get deep into it. Before we do, I want to make sure that everybody knows, those of you who are tuned in live to live.twit.tv or in the chat room at irc.twit.tv can post questions for Dave, and I'll pass along as many as I can. So, Dave, let's start with how DLP came to be and explain something about the technology. When was it invented? How did it come about?
Well, DLP was actually invented way back kind of in the mid to late 80s by an engineer at Texas Instruments, Dr. Larry Hornbeck. And there's a lot of different stories of how he invented the technology, but I believe one of the legends, maybe we'll call it a legend, is he was driving out in West Texas and he was kind of noticing how light reflects off of his rearview mirror. And he kind of thought, wouldn't it be interesting if we could control light in a digital manner? And so he started working in our central research lab on this idea of digitally controlling light. Believe it or not, the first devices he created were called deformable mirror devices. That was the acronym for DMD back in those days. Mm. And the mirror was actually thin enough silicon that it actually would deform to create or to steer light from one direction to another. Along the way, he realized, as well as the rest of the team working on the technology, that a solid mirror that would tilt, you know, one way or the other, approximately plus or minus 14 degrees, might be a better way of digitally steering the light. And so we changed the fundamental structure of the pixel technology in kind of the early 90s. And in 1996, we launched our first production-ready projection systems. And I guess, as they say, the rest is history.
Indeed. Now, what's so fascinating about this is it's a light modulator. There are several different types of light modulators, which basically take a light coming in, and individual pixels can be brightened or darkened,
right,
depending on what you need, what the image needs to look like. And in the case of DLP, it's a chip. It's a silicon chip, just like any other chip, except that it's covered on the surface with literally millions of tiny little mirrors, as you mentioned. And I think we have a picture of a close-up, a graphic representation anyway, mirrors one, for John to pull up there and be able, we can see what that kind of looks like.
We can talk about it while he's loading the graphics. So, yeah, the way I like to describe that, well, let me hold up this device and kind of get, hope people can kind of get an idea of what the device looks like. This is actually our 1.2-inch 2K device. And so in this device, there are over 2.2 million micromirrors. And these mirrors can, as you said, they can independently flip plus or minus 14 degrees. And so the way I kind of like to talk about this or visualize this, I don't know, back when I was at Purdue University you know, we'd go to a football game. We had this thing in the end zone called the card section. And all these students would hold these cards up, right? You remember that? You'd hold these cards up in unison, and each one would have different colors. And the further away you were from that, you could actually see, you know, see an image. Well, so imagine that on a microscopic scale, where we have actually in our 4K device up to 8.8 million mirrors. Each one is able to move several thousands of times per second. And the way we work our grayscale, if you have that mirror on more than off, or let's say on and the majority of the time, then it's a brighter shade of gray. If you have it off more than it's on, then it's a darker shade of gray. And then we take that grayscale and we add color in a couple different ways. You can have three chips, which each chip would be dedicated to either RGB, or we have color filtering systems using a color wheel in our one-chip device, one-chip projectors, and that's how we add color, and then you end up ultimately getting the full spectrum of the rainbow. So it's a very, very difficult technology to describe. It fascinates me every time I'm trying to explain it to somebody, because people always ask, well, how do you make these things? You know, I mean, they're so small, but it's just, you know, the great thing is it's using standard Texas Instruments wafer processing, and then we build the mirror technology on top of that. So it's the benefits of this technology. It's fundamentally stable over time. You know, it's extremely reliable. We've had projectors in movie theaters now for over 10 years that are still working very, very, very well. And sure. And you know, using the speed of these mirrors, we can. And the fundamental pixel technology, we literally have chips, and I've got a little thing here I can show you. Let me see if I can get this lined up just right. I've got to work with the latency of the camera here.
Right, exactly.
So you can see all the way to one side is a 4K chip, the biggest one in this demonstration here, and then all the way to the other side is a little Pico chip that we actually have now in digital still cameras, digital video cameras. And actually, just recently announced in a new Galaxy Beam mobile phone from Samsung, a little handheld projector in a phone. So, you know, the fundamental benefits of the technology, you know, the fast speed of the mirrors and the size of these pixels allow us to do a wide range of chipsets.
I think we have the graphics now, and I want to show. The one called Mirror One, which is a very close-up view of a little tiny section of the chip. And you can see how the mirrors tilt one way and the other.
That's right. And it's those mirrors, by the way, range from 13.7 microns all the way down to 5 microns. And what you see underneath the mirror there are our CMOS memory cells. And so we use a bias voltage, either a positive voltage or a negative voltage, to pull that mirror one way, and then we can release it, and then the opposite voltage will pull it the other way.
So we'll be able to see that in Mirror 2, in the graphic called Mirror 2. We will be able to see a little bit more of what's underneath the mirror. There we can see it.
Yeah, now you can see the hinge. You can see the yoke that it pivots on, and then the electrodes. So, it's a miracle how this thing works. It's a miraculous little microelectromechanical machine that we call the digital micro mirror device. And each one of those pixels, as we said, is independently controlled.
Right. We should say that DLP stands for digital light processing, which is the overall name of the technology, and DMD, or digital micro mirror device, is the name of the actual chip.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, it has always astonished me that mirrors can be made so tiny, and that it's actually a moving part. And there are over 2 million moving parts on the surface of a chip that's maybe roughly, what, an inch on a side, or no more than a couple inches on a side.
Yeah, the smallest chips we have are 0.2, and then they go all the way up to almost 1.4 inches on the diagonal.
Incredible. Just incredible. And so what's amazing to me is that there's not more failure. I mean, anything with a moving part, there's eventually going to be a failure, right? I mean, the physical stuff wears out after a while. particularly since these mirrors are pivoting back and forth many, many times a second. And I wanted to get to that as a description of how you get different colors of gray. You were mentioning earlier about how if the mirror, basically the mirror pivots in one of two directions, and that either sends the light through the lens and onto the screen, or away from the lens and not onto the screen.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So for a pure white pixel, the light comes into the DMD, and it's reflected right back out onto the screen. That's how you obviously get a bright white pixel. Then the mirror, if you want a black pixel, absence of light, then the mirror flips in the opposite direction, and the light actually goes into sort of a what we call a light absorber. And so the absence of light creates your black pixel. And then using pulse width modulation, you can vary, let's say the mirrors are flipping thousands of times per second. And in that time, in that moment of time, if the mirror is on approximately half the time and it's off half the time, that's exactly a 50% shade of gray. And then you can just sort of carry that out from 0% gray all the way to, or white all the way to 100%, which is black.
Right.
So that's how we get our incredibly sort of smooth grayscale.
Right. Because as the mirror flips back and forth, each time it flips, it spends more or less time in the on and off position, giving you that those different scales of gray.
Exactly. You got it.
Now, Woogie in the chat room is asking if we would explain the single chip projector technology. You mentioned a little earlier that there are basically two ways to do a DLP projection system. One is with three chips, one representing the red, the green, and the blue.
Correct.
And the other using only a single chip. Let's start with three chip because that is a little easier to understand. And I think, okay. John, we have the three chip graphic we can pull up and show what how a three chip DLP projector works. And this is what you're going to find in commercial cinemas and in more expensive home theater projectors based on DLP.
As well as large venue projectors that you'll see in very, very large auditoriums and, you know, the rental and staging environment and so forth. And yeah. And so what you're looking there at there is a representation of a prism assembly. So imagine white light coming into the back of that prism and then using color filters or optical coatings, we split the white light into red, green, and blue. And so there's a DMD mounted on the end of each of those parts of the prism that you can see in the photo there or in the graphic. The white light comes in, it gets split into RGB. It illuminates up each DMD according to the color spectrum that's necessary at that time, and then it sends that light back out onto the screen. So I've actually got this is what the prism assembly looks like. I'm not sure how this will show up on camera. But this is a prism assembly from a. Let me hold it still and catch up with the latency of the camera here. Let's see here. We want to do it this way.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
There you go. So that's a prism assembly from this. This is a prism assembly from one of our 2K and 4K DLP cinema projectors. So you can see where if I turn it this way, this would be the output where the light would come out. And you can almost see the different colors in there because of all the optical coatings.
Yeah,
and
yep,
then each one of these surfaces where these metal brackets are, there's one there. And if I keep flipping it around, there's another one here. That's where the DMDs would actually be mounted around this prism assembly. So, yeah, it's taking, you know, it's the fundamentals of the way we learn how to do colors in, I guess, primary school, red, green, and blue. We put them right back through the same light path, right through the projection lens onto the screen. So
That's how a three-chip system works. I must make a little sidebar here and say what we learned at school was red, yellow, and blue because those are the three primary colors for print, for paint, for reflected light, whereas red, green, and blue are the three primary colors for emitted light. So I just want to make sure we make that distinction.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, now going on to one chip, This is amazing. This is found in less expensive home theater projectors. And if we can pull up the one chip graphic, we'll be able to see that there's a single chip, a single DMD, and a light source, and what's called a color filter wheel. Why don't you take us through this?
Yeah, so this is the traditional way up until probably within the last couple of years, and we'll talk about some of the new technology here in a moment. But this is the sort of the traditional way of one how one-chip projectors work. So we were talking about pulse width modulation, and so here we've combined the ability for a digital micromirror device to have this, you know, this smooth grayscale with a color filtering system that would put RGB and actually in this case yellow, cyan, magenta color on the DMD. So now you have to consider, you know, what color each pixel needs to be, and you're timing the rotation of this wheel with the light that's coming through that color wheel. So let's say you want to have a bright, you know, very saturated color of purple on a particular pixel. So you're now timing the light hitting that pixel as the red segment comes by, as well as the blue segment. And it's happening, again, so fast. We're talking about mirror flips that are thousands of times per second here, that your eye is sort of the final, you know, almost analog converter here that's putting all of those digital colors up on the screen simultaneously and creating the wide color, the color gamut that these systems are capable of showing. And so the color wheels, the great thing about this technology, our customers can choose the number of segments in those color wheels, RGB, yellow, cyan, magenta, the segment width and so forth, in order to maximize colors depending upon, do you want this to have a Rec. 709 color space as an example? Do you want to go beyond that for more saturated colors? Do you want to maximize the presentation for PowerPoint, those kinds of things? So they're pretty unique in their operation. So that's the traditional and up to just the last couple of years, the majority of the way that light was put into a single chip projector. But now we actually are using LEDs, RGB LEDs, as well as a hybrid laser phosphor systems to do. You know, to put the light through a single chip projector, and there are numerous examples of those available today that are quite stunning. And frankly, that's how we're able to go to reduce the size of the projector from traditional conference room projectors down to let me just grab this, but down to a projector that's inside a mobile phone. And so you can see there's the output right there, lens. And so this is illuminated with LEDs. Mm-hmm. So all kinds of new technology, laser, phosphor, hybrid, as well as LEDs that we're able to take advantage of now for single chip illumination as well.
Now, what's the resolution of that phone projector?
The resolution of this, I believe, is it's either wide UXGA or NHD, and I am not 100%. It's this the resolution of this projector is NHD. Sorry about that. And it's phenomenal. I wish I could demo it for you.
I apologize. What is NHD? I mean, how many by how many?
Good question. NHD resolution.
He's trying to find out.
Sorry. It's 1/9 the resolution of an HD display.
Okay. All right. So it's quite a bit less. And I assume you can't have a picture very large on that. It couldn't fill a very big screen or area because LEDs typically don't have as much light output. Plus the fact that they have to be in a phone, so they can't be pushed too hard or they'd get too hot.
Yeah, you'd be surprised. I mean, this phone projector is about 15 lumens, 15 to 20 lumens in a dark environment. It's pretty amazing that the power of a projector this size. Now, of course, you know, you can't compare that to a conference room projector or a cinema projector. But for sharing video content, photographs and so forth for the kind of the one to many. Gaming applications and rooms that are, you know, darker environment. We actually at our booth at CES earlier this year at our meeting room, we were showing gaming games up to screen sizes about 50 inches. So it's pretty remarkable if you haven't seen them. They're available today in digital still cameras. They're available in digital movie cameras as well. But there's also a wide range of the smaller projectors that are everything from laptop accessories up to, you know, very, very bright, smaller conference room projectors. But it's just an example of how we've taken the fundamental chip technology, the pixels that we were describing earlier, packaging them in very, very small packages, taking advantage of the speed of the mirrors to create all these very, very unique opportunities for sharing content, again, kind of one to many, as opposed to grouping people around these smaller devices.
Sure, sure. I got several questions in the chat room, so let me post a couple of them for you. SoCal Ray Jr. asks, are 4K DLP chips available for the consumer marketplace yet, or are those only for commercial at this point?
Right now, our 4K chipsets are just available in the commercial market.
I assume they'll trickle down into the home market at some point, but not yet.
That's correct.
Yeah. Let's see. I had a couple of... Oh, there was some comment up here I just had to mention to you, which was... I can't find it now, but... if someone breaks a DLP projector, is that 15 million years of bad luck? I just love that.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, yeah, it's got to be something like that.
Yeah. Lawn Dog in the chat room is asking, if the response time in LCDs are like 5 milliseconds or 4 milliseconds or so, what is the response time for DLP?
Much, much, much faster than LCD. We're moving our pixel thousands of times per second. And so our response time versus LCD is kind of a hard thing to measure. We're a digital mirror that we're flipping back and forth, you know, over 2,000 times per second.
So your LCD, response time is really in the millisecond, I've heard that the response time is actually in the microsecond range.
It's 10. I think it's 10 microseconds is the answer to the question.
Right.
We don't, you know, unlike an LCD that's, I know you know this, the organic pixel that's got to rotate, you know, we're flipping plus or minus, on off thousands of times per second. So yeah, we're quite a bit faster than LCD technology. And that's why typically you'll see in a DLP system, when you look at motion, you don't see the kind of motion blur that you might traditionally see in some other types of display technologies.
Right, exactly. Luis in the chat room is asking, how many steps how many different positions can the mirror be in, or is it an analog, the positioning? And I guess it's analog in the sense that the mirror moves from one position to another, but there really are only two positions, right?
That's right. When the mirror is operating, the mirror is either on all the way or off. Now, there is a flat state, but the flat state is only really used when the system is turned off. The mirrors kind of come back to what we call their park position, and that's exactly kind of midway between on and off. But when the mirrors are flipping, they're flipping either all the way on or all the way off.
And Web One in the chat room is asking, what is the mirror latency actuation time from full black to full white? And that must certainly be in the microsecond range or even the nanosecond range.
It is, and I don't have that exact number of the latency time between full off and full on, but it's quick.
Dan, your PR guy, when we were setting up this interview, said to me, well, now if you're going to be getting into things like mirror actuation time, and
you know,
of course,
what might be really fun for you and your audience, if you know those kinds of questions, we have DMD designers who would love to talk to the full capability of the device, where we're talking about latency and on off times and so forth. Might make for a good follow up conversation at some point.
Sure. Well, let's you and I work on that. But in the meantime, Web9784 asks, how are the mirrors attached to the hinge?
Well, it's not glue. Let's put it that way. So that's a great thing about the technology is, I mean, it takes the fundamentals of semiconductor fabrication processes, which some people may be aware of, others may not, of, starting with your wafer. We do metal deposition on top of that, and then we do the typical expose and sort of etch away the materials that you don't want. And so it's a combination of metal dep, etch, get rid of, and eventually what you have is a mirror structure. And sort of the very final process is the removal of the final piece under the hinge that actually sort of frees the mirrors so that they can now flip. It's a remarkable process. But it's, you know, for people who aren't aware of how semiconductors are manufactured, it's not unlike exposing a photo. Instead of photo paper, we're now using silicon.
Right. Let's see. Eagle Pep in the chat room is asking, has the rainbow effect been eliminated? We didn't talk about this with single chip DLP. There is something that some people are sensitive to called the rainbow effect. And that is because the color wheel is rotating around and the red, green, and blue, and sometimes cyan, yellow, and magenta portions of the image are displayed sequentially rather than simultaneously. And as a result, under some conditions, with some types of images, if you move your eyes around, you see these little quick flashes of rainbow. Does LED illumination help with that?
Yeah, it does. But let me go back and address the first part of the question. So it's true in the early days that was an issue that was a result of some of just RGB color wheels that were operating at slower speeds.
Let's in fact go to cinema, because that is of course is where we see the introduction of technologies very often before it gets to the home. For example, we have 4K DLP cinema projectors, or at least your chip is now available. And I know that Christie and Barco, I think, are making 4K digital cinema displays or projectors, right?
That's correct. Yeah, Barco, Christie, and NEC all have DLP cinema projectors available in 4K resolution, in addition to three different sizes of 2K chipsets. And so the idea there was, you know, as you, I know, are well aware, based upon, I think, a presentation just a few short weeks ago, the DCI standard was released with both 2K and 4K resolutions. And so we kind of believe from the very, very earliest development processes of our DLP cinema technology, it was important to make sure that you had the right chip sort of for the right screen. So that's why we fundamentally have ended up where we have the family of our newest 0.69 S2K chip, the 0.98 chip, the 1.2 chip, and those are all 2K, and then we have a 1.38-inch diagonal 4K chip. So our customers in the theatrical market are fully now capable of purchasing whatever it is they would like to have with regards to 4K or 2K.
And I want to get more into the deployment of DLP into cinemas and the transition from film to digital cinema. But if you'll give me a moment before we get to that, I do want to take a moment to thank our sponsor for this episode, which is Netflix. And of course, you can use a DLP projector or any type of display, including smartphones and tablets, your TV, your computer screen. Just about anything will display Netflix streaming. And just about anything will accept Netflix streaming. And any consumer electronics device you can name probably has a Netflix app on it that will let you stream thousands of TV episodes and movies directly to your PC or your TV, your projector, your smartphone, your tablet, all instantly, saving you time, money, and hassle. You can even start on one device and finish on another. It's the ultimate inconvenience. For a free 30-day trial, be sure to go to netflix.com/twit And be sure to use that URL when you're signing up for that 30-day free trial. Those few of you watching who are listening who might not already have Netflix, that's netflix.com/twit. And we thank Netflix so much for their support of Home Theater Geeks and the entire Twit network. So getting back to digital cinema, give us a little overview of the transition. Obviously, for close to 100 years, we had film projection in commercial cinemas, and now that is changing, and we're moving to digital cinema. How has that been going? How far has it penetrated into the marketplace? What's going on with that?
Yeah, so it's taken us some time. We started developing projectors for the digital cinema market using DLP cinema technology probably as early as 1998. As you know, it took a little while for the industry to sort of catch up with our technology development. And we showed our first 2K system kind of back in the early 2000s. And that's when our customers started to deploy small numbers. But in 2002, of course, DCI was formed by the six major studios. And a couple of years later, the DCI standard came out. And I think that's when...
And by the way, that stands for Digital Cinema Initiative, just for those who don't know.
Yeah, Digital Cinema Initiatives, correct. And so... So now, once there was a document that described to the industry the sort of minimum acceptable requirements for not only a digital cinema projector, but also the playback system and the theater management system and the distribution methodology and packaging of the content, that's really when I think the deployment started to grow. However, it was kind of a slow and steady growth. And then the hockey stick part of the curve really came along with Avatar. And I think when James Cameron first started talking about his vision of Avatar and 3D and how digital was going to enable that in ways that maybe film couldn't achieve, we started seeing a significant increase in customer demand. And so you really do see that significant hockey stick, kind of in the early to mid 2009 range. And so then once the success of Avatar was, I think, well recognized by the worldwide cinema industry, the growth has just continued up to the point where today we have over 65,000 screens deployed worldwide, with both the majority of them being DLP Cinema 2K projectors, but also some 4K as well. And that continues to grow. I mean, we've had just incredibly successful years over the last few. We're looking forward to The Hobbit coming out later this year, and I know you'll want to talk about that, kind of pushing the next-gen version of this technology with high frame rates. And, so if you think about, there's around, depending upon who you talk to, between 120 and 150,000 screens worldwide. We're somewhere a little over halfway there if you kind of consider the 120,000 of the ones that are likely to convert, because there may be some that just for whatever reason, conversion may not be something that that theater would do. But that's where we are. We've got 65,000 screens and roughly about 8.5 out of 10 exhibitors worldwide who've converted have utilized one of our DLP cinema chipsets that have been available to them. So we're very happy and very pleased with those results.
Now, how about 3D? How many of those 65,000 screens have 3D capabilities? Do you know?
Yeah, it's a little more than half of them. What happened on 3D is it typically started with the large auditoriums in each exhibitor's building. As the digital cinema projector was installed, the good thing is for many of the 3D systems that are available out there, they can come back in and add those later and make the projector 3D capable. So we're starting to see more and more of the projectors that were installed initially just for 2D now being 3D ready as well. Frankly, many of the projectors that are being installed today are they kind of go in 3D ready because in the early days, there wasn't a whole lot of 3D content, but now, as you know, there's quite a bit of 3D content, and so you really do need to have more than just your one or two large sort of, Friday night opening screens available for 3D movies.
Right, exactly. And certainly, as you said, 4K. What's the penetration of 4K right now? Probably not very high, because it's pretty new.
No, for us... Yeah, for us, it's we've had the chipset available since kind of the late 2010 timeframe, and it's probably a little less than 10% total. Mm-hmm. Really, mostly driven by in the U.S. A group called DCIP, which is a group of exhibitors, AMC, Regal, and Cinemark, and so our largest customer by far for 4K has been Cinemark, but we have them all around the world. It's just, depending upon the size of your screen, I know this is going to be maybe somewhat controversial to the people listening, because I've done my homework and I've listened to some of your previous podcasts here, or webcasts. We've taken side by side images just like you're doing right now. We've put 4K on one side, we put 2K on the other side, and whether you use a 4K master or a 2K master, if you sit where I do in a movie theater and you're watching a movie, I got to tell you, as detail-oriented as I am, it's very, very difficult to tell. Now, if you're all the way down front, actually we did an experiment with a Cinemark theater right across the street from us, the first row, two or three, maybe you could see the difference with a Simpty test pattern. But beyond that, it was a little difficult. So really what this becomes is an economic decision. The quality is there. They both are DCI compliant. In the case of DLP Cinema, we're known for our bright 2D as well as 3D images. We're known for our the high speed of our mirrors, which gives us the ability to do high frame rate today. And we're known for our contrast. And frankly, we're known for our long-term reliability. So the exhibitor has a choice. They kind of fit the right size projector to their screen. And the good news is, if you want 4K, that's great. Barco Christian AC would love to sell you a 4K projector. If you want 2K and you've got a 20-foot screen or a 25-foot screen, they've got the perfect solution for you there as well.
But of course, the other issue with regards to 4K is the studios, in order to make it worthwhile, in my opinion, other than having a really big screen, is having 4K native content. And that's, for example, right, I went and saw Brave at the world premiere of the movie, and they had a Christie, I believe it was a 4K projector, but it was up converting a 2K master.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, the other issue is getting the studios to deliver 4K content to those theaters that have it, if you're going to see any benefit at all.
That's right. And, it's interesting because I think starting kind of in the mid 2000s, there were some 4K movies that started to get released into the theater, but it was on average about three or four per year. It kind of peaked in 2010 with, I think the number is about 12 4K, originated movies that were distributed to digital cinema theaters all around the world. Last year, there were, 10. And I think, or maybe 11, I don't remember the exact number. This year, there have only been a few to date. So, here's kind of our philosophy, and I know everybody has opinions about this, and this is just ours, that we believe certainly you should capture in the highest resolution possible. I mean, there are some great new cameras in the marketplace today. We certainly believe that cinematographers should be taking advantage of the highest resolution from a capture standpoint. But, we all know a lot of movies still today, a lot of the special effects, believe it or not, it's still 1080p. There's a lot of workflow that's still done in the HD world. And, a 4K native movie, there is a price premium, a cost premium that you do have to kind of deal with. And the studios that we talk to, many of them anyhow, they haven't seen the return on the investment from a distribution standpoint. Mm. But again, let me be clear on this. We certainly believe that from a capture and even archive, the higher resolution, the better. Distribution today, it's predominantly 2K. And I think it's because of the economics. And, as we just discussed, the majority of the projectors that are out there today are 2K projectors. Now, I've seen, going the other direction, 4K native down to 2K, I would certainly rather see that than try to up-res 2K to go up to 4K.
I agree with you 100%. Absolutely. That's going to produce a much better picture overall. You mentioned earlier high frame rates, and I want to make sure we get this this piece of the puzzle into our discussion. of course, as we know, Peter Jackson is shooting, or maybe he's done shooting now, The Hobbit at 48 frames per second. James Cameron is expecting to, planning to shoot Avatar 2 at 60 frames per second. Can the DLP projectors that are currently out in the market handle these higher frame rates? And particularly in the case of The Hobbit and Avatar, both are going to be in 3D. So they've got to have some pretty high frame rates inherent in their technology. Are they going to be able to do it?
Our Series 2 projectors can. The Series 2 projectors that are out today with a software upgrade that we've already provided to our customers can handle 24, 48, and 60 frames per second, as long as the IMB, or integrated media block, or some people now call it an IMS, integrated media server, is capable of passing that signal through to the projector. So yeah, the majority of the projectors that are installed to date are what we call our Series 2 projectors are ready, and actually they're the projectors that have been used in the trade shows so far that have shown, it's about a 10 or 12 minute clip of The Hobbit at Las Vegas. The CinemaCon show was the first one where that was actually performed. And actually a year ago, we did that with some test footage that Mr. Cameron shot that we did for the audience sort of as maybe a first look at what the promise of higher frame rate can bring to the movie going audience.
Well, I saw that. I saw the Cameron footage, I think what you're talking about, at NAB this year. It was a demonstration of, he shot some fake scenes, a medieval castle and banquet and so on, at different frame rates. And just, we looked at them one after the other. It was remarkable, just remarkable.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, obviously I was at the demonstration a year ago in Las Vegas when he debuted that content. And you know, just like everything that James Cameron does, I mean, it was you know, first class. I mean, from the set to the actors to the he knew what he wanted to capture, to kind of show the difference between 24, 48, and 60. The difference between 24 and 48 to me was just unreal. I mean, especially that scene where, you know, you had all those knights and you know, the women sitting at that table with those chairs with all the vertical and horizontal lines, and he purposely did that pan fairly quickly from one end of the table to the other. That would just cause havoc with all the costuming and the furniture in that room, which you saw in the 24 frame per second version. But then the 48 and the 60, of course, all of that was cleaned up. Now the interesting thing is, I believe, and you can talk to him and he can tell you exactly what he did, but I think it was so good, he had to go in and sort of create some kind of digital motion blur so that it still kind of maintained, and you saw this, I'm sure, it's sort of that filmic look, but yet got rid of all that motion stuff that you would see with those kinds of pans and scans in the 24 frame per second world that we live in today.
Exactly. And in fact, a lot of people object similarly to the way they object to LCD flat panel frame interpolation, which is a different thing altogether. But some people see this 48 frames per second and 60 frames per second, they complain that it doesn't look like film, that it looks more like video, and therefore it's not as good. I myself don't subscribe to that argument, but a lot of people, I hear it a lot.
Well, you know, I think it's going to be just like 3D. And so if we talk about sort of the, you know, some of the pros and cons of 3D, you know, there are movie makers like Mr. Cameron and Mr. Jackson and many others, Michael Bay, who have proven they can do, you know, phenomenal 3D movies. And it fits the story, and it's the right sort of tool for, you know, to enhance the storytelling. I think there's others that have tried to insert 3D into a story that maybe it wasn't story appropriate, let's put it that way. Or maybe they've tried to take advantage of some of the gimmicky part of 3D, and which is kind of non-theatrical, in my opinion. I really like the way Jim Cameron did Avatar, where, you know, everything started at the screen and kind of went back from there. As he described some of the very, very early shots, it was almost like looking into an aquarium. I think high frame rate may be the same. There may be a need for some movies to increase the frame rate from 24 to 48, or 48 to 60, and take advantage, whether it's a lot of motion or the difficult shots, whatever, that, you know, it will enhance the story. And I know that Peter Jackson, when he premiered his content at CinemaCon for the very first time, he couldn't be at the show because, of course, he was in New Zealand shooting. But he did introduce it via, you know, a pre-recorded video. And he said, look, you know, I understand this is going to look different. And that's why I brought, I think it was either 10 or 12 minutes of footage, because I want your eyes to adjust to how this new way of showing a story on a big screen is going to kind of look. And he told people this was completely unfinished. You know, some of it was still green screen. I mean, it was like kind of hot off the camera footage. And I think some people kind of got it. And I think other people kind of looked at it and said, ooh, I don't know about that. So, but I know, you know, from talking to people who work for him, that when this is released in December, I think we're all going to be amazed at what he's able to do from a storytelling standpoint, bringing in this new technology into the theatrical space.
Now, a lot of people in the chat room are asking, when we get to these high frame rates in 3D, is it going to be 48 frames per second per eye, or is 48 going to be divided into 24 per eye?
No, it'll be 48 per eye or 60 per eye. So it's pretty challenging, and that kind of gets us back to, that's why it's really important to be able to flip those mirrors as fast as we can flip them today, because the great thing is, you know, our engineering team, when given the challenge a year ago, I was in Jim Cameron's office, and we called back to the team and said, hey, he wants to do this in 2 months, literally, and can we make it happen? And they're like, yeah, you know, we just need to crank up the frame rate of the signal coming into the projector, and we were fine. Now, at the time, there wasn't anything to drive it that fast, so we had to use some professional grade equipment to load his content on. But now, of course, all the server manufacturers, the IMB manufacturers, have caught up, and so they're able to do that. But it's great to have a technology with the flexibility of DLP, because we can do all these things that we've talked about so far during the show.
Mm-hmm. And I assume that you can also do the high frame rates. Someone in the chat room here is asking about that you can do these 48 per eye or 60 per eye 3D at 4K as well. That the number of mirrors doesn't matter. They'll all just flip at the same speed, right?
Yeah. Yes, that's true. However, today the chip, our 4K chip, is capable of flipping fast enough to handle 4K content in, you know, at those frame rates. We didn't design the electronics that sort of send the signals onto the DMD with enough bandwidth to do that. However, our engineers they never cease to amaze me here. And given the challenge, you know, we're working on that today. And, you know, my belief is if they can figure out how to make these little 5.5 micron mirrors flip thousands of times per second without flying off, which they've done, obviously, they'll go figure that out as well. So, yeah, we'll be ready for full 4K content at 60 frames per second per eye when the content is available, which I believe will likely be Mr. Cameron's movie when it first comes out, when the next Avatar 2.
He's going to do 60 frames per second in 3D.
Yeah.
And do you think it's going to be released in 4K as well?
Well, I don't know. You know, last time we talked to him about it, which was actually it was about exactly a year ago. He was still doing some testing to determine. Last time I talked to him about this, he decided for sure 60 frames per second. I mean, I'll tell you, James Cameron and Peter Jackson and Michael Bay, a lot of these guys, they all kind of have the same priorities. That number one, they want brighter 3D, and so you know, our customers are actively working on that with us, and I know we'll probably hit lasers eventually, but that's where a lot of these latest demos on laser illuminated projectors have come from, as well as just making more and more efficient optical systems to couple with our chips. But really, number one on their list is brighter 3D. Number two has been higher frame rate for guys like James Cameron and Peter Jackson, some of these other guys. And then last has been spatial resolution. So the last I talked to him, he knew that, you know, he was asking for a lot from the entire infrastructure to go do 60 frames per second per eye, you know, 3D with 4K content. But not unlike the first time he brought us all together when he told us about his vision of Avatar in 3D. And by the way, back then we didn't have the ability to do even, you know, what he did with Avatar. You know, we all went to work and provided the solution for him because, you know, when a guy like that talks, you know, we all clearly listen. And I think as we all know now, that was a great thing to do. Right. So, so we'll see, you know, I haven't heard any recent updates from him, but, knowing Jim Cameron, you know, he's going to want the best. And if he considers, you know, 4K at 60 per eye, you know, at whatever brightness levels he's going to be searching for, we'll go figure out a way to make it happen.
Well, now this is a question that is coming up several times with several people in the chat room, which is how can DLP technology improve the brightness of 3D, which is, of course, one of the main complaints about 3D in the cinema and at home, because the glasses filter out so much light by the time it reaches your eyes, it looks very dim. What can Texas Instruments and DLP technology do to combat that problem?
Well, and those are really good points. And I guess I can start by, let's just back up just a moment and talk about film projectors. So film projectors with a brand new bulb that's, you know, scaled appropriately to the screen, if you pull the film out, so you're just running kind of open gate, the typical light level that would produce onto a movie screen is 16 foot Lamberts. And so a foot Lambert is sort of it's a unit of measure that talks about light over a given area, right? So
right.
Then when you put, so then to take it to the next level, which is where the SMPTE standard for digital cinema came from, when you put clear film, you just run, you know, clear film, 35 millimeter film through a projector, you're already cutting the light back just a bit because now you've got something for the light to have to go through, right? And so that cuts it from 16 to 14 foot Lamberts. Mm-hmm. So 14 foot Lamberts became the standard for, you know, the baseline of a 2D digital cinema projector. And so, you know, all of our customers, as they were designing their very first, you know, production DLP cinema projectors, knew that that was the target. And, you know, going back to the basics of how the DLP chip operates, we're a highly, highly reflective surface. As you can see, you know, when I mean, you can just see how that, you know, it literally is a mirror, right? So we're, you know, light in equals light out on a DLP chip. Now there's, as the mirror rotates, we have to deal with you know, the light that could kind of leak in underneath the pixel and so forth. But we've accommodated that through dark coatings and so forth. We've also significantly shrunk the gap between the pixels, as well as the little dot in the middle where the hinge post is. So we've done many, many things over the years at the DLP level to enhance the opportunity, let's put it this way, for the light to hit that pixel and get out on the screen. And now our customers then over the years have done really, really good jobs of creating super efficient optical systems and reflector systems for their xenon lamps to where 14 foot Lamberts through the wide range of the projectors that they have available really has become sort of routine for them. It's amazing to me. If you go take a look at the statistics, you kind of the bell curve for screens worldwide, it kind of centers around 32 to 34 feet. So that all the screens to the kind of the left of that curve, the ones that are, you know, down to, you know, 15, 20 feet, our customers can do a really good job of lighting those things up with very small lamps, 3 kilowatt, 2 kilowatt, and 1.2 kilowatts. The larger screens need the larger lamps. But they, you know, over the years, they've done a great job with optical coatings and cooling systems to make sure that they can, you know, couple all the light into the DMD and it's been phenomenal. So 14 foot Lamberts for all of our range of projectors in 2D has been sort of the norm. Now you go to 3D, because you're right. 3D, you know, putting the glasses on and cutting the light, you know, for just a left eye or a right eye, that's going to take 50% of your efficiency away right there. And then you start talking about optical inefficiencies of whether it's a real D, you know, lens out in front of the projection lens, or any of the master image system, the Dolby system, any of the other systems out there, you know, they kind of start at 50% and they go down from there. So yeah, they're great systems, but they really hurt us with regards to light efficiency. But the good news about DLP cinema technology, well, let me just kind of say this. Before the last Transformers movie came out, I know that they were very concerned about 3D light levels because there had been some kind of very negative reports written about people going into movie theaters and seeing some dim 3D movies, and it wasn't doing anybody any favor at that point in time. Not us, not our customers, not the theater owners, and not the movie makers. So they set a standard, kind of a second standard of 6-foot Lamberts, which it's really interesting that that sounds like a low number, mm-hmm. but historically we've seen 4, 3, 2, even literally down to a single foot Lambert in some of these theaters when you take a light meter in and measure it. But what we decided is, you know, the industry has kind of decided that 4-foot Lamberts might be a place to start. They decided for Transformers that they wanted to shoot for 6, and they were going to go out and screen theaters. And all of our customers have the ability to do 6-foot Lamberts. Many of them have their lamps and their system set, so that's typically the minimum that they'll show. But I know that we do have a problem out there, and that's why number one on the majority of the movie makers that we talk to, number one on their priority list from an image quality standpoint is, hey, let's get that brightness level up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, we've come to the end of a fascinating hour, and I know there's much more to talk about. So perhaps you can come on again and bring along one of your engineers, would you?
Sure, no problem. I can't believe an hour has gone by already.
I know. It happens so fast. Not that you haven't been very informative. You have, and you really know your stuff. You know, the chat room is merciless, and they want to know flip rates and, microseconds and all that stuff. So let's do it again sometime, shall we?
Certainly. Thanks, Scott. I appreciate it.
Great. Thank you so much. You can read all about DLP technology at DLP.com. And you can even follow Texas Instruments on Twitter at TI_DLP. My online home, of course, is hometheater.com, and you can email me at scott@twit.tv. Next week, my guest geek is scheduled to be Martin Dornfeld, the senior engineer at Surgex, which is a AC power management and conditioning company. So we're going to be talking all about the power that powers your home theater. Sure hope you'll join me then. Until then, geek out.